This podcast brought to you by Hope 1032.
Joined on Hope 1032 by Clint Gresham. He has a brand new book out called Becoming. Now, you might not have heard of the name, but he was a former long snapper for the Seattle Seahawks. A little bit of heartbreaking news for me as an Arizona Cardinals fan, but he joins us right now. Clint, thanks for joining us, mate.
Yeah, man. Great to be on with you.
Hey, one of the things about this book is it starts in a pretty heartbreaking place. It's a Super Bowl loss is where you chose to start the book. Why did you do that?
Yeah, man, I think that all of us, you know, we're impressed with people's accomplishments, but we really connect with people's defeats. And that was a public defeat that seemed unjust, the way that it went down, man. It felt like it was stolen from us. And all of us have stories in our lives of something like that, something that is a disappointing outcome that shakes us to the core of who we are, makes us ask all of those questions that none of us have answers to, you know, why do bad things happen to good people and all of that kind of stuff that gets in our head. And so I chose to start there for that very reason. And after we lost the game, I remember I'm walking off the field and there's red, white, and blue confetti raining down, you know, the Patriots colors. And I'm like trying to put to words how I'm feeling. And we walk into the locker room and Coach Carroll says a couple of words to the team. And the locker room is very tense, obviously. And after he says a couple of words to the team, Coach Carroll looks at me and he says, "Okay, Gresh, go ahead and pray for us now." And I'm kind of like, "Oh gosh, well, no pressure here, right? Like, let me say something to speak for God that's going to make this moment just not feel horrible." And I'm like, I don't even know if I believe in God at this point. Like, this hurt, man. Like, yeah. It just shook us. And so I mustered up the best prayer that I could come up with, and I don't even know what I said. And I realized that in that moment of tension that I felt of, I need to say something to bring relief. I need to say something that's going to make this pain not feel so palpable to so many guys on the team. And what I realized is that it's actually okay. Like, it's actually okay to just be able to sit there in your pain and not run from it. And what I wanted to do was to make people not feel their pain. And that very idea of helping rescue people from their pain and their loss and disappointment is actually what is destroying our society in a lot of ways, because the second that we start to run from pain, it usually comes from the introduction of some type of substance to numb out how we're feeling. And if we really believe that God works all things for our good, then maybe I need to have a new relationship with my pain and my disappointment and see that God is giving me something and growing something in me that I otherwise wouldn't have had I not gone through this moment. So instead of this thing that blows me apart and shakes me to the core of who I am, when I know who I am and I know what God says about me and my identity, then when tough times come in my life, I really can count it all joy throughout my trials. Like it says in James, count it all joy when you walk through trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. Because God knows what is on the other side of a trial.
Yeah.
And God allows in his wisdom what he could prevent in his power, because he is trying to mold us into the image of his son. But that doesn't come from comfortable times.
You know, I think at some point in all of our lives, we hit a place where we've worked very hard and we've poured in everything we possibly can, and it just doesn't come together. And we face that fear and disappointment. One of the things I was very aware of was failure is not nearly as scary when you see it face to face as opposed to it kind of just lurking around a corner.
Oh, man, that's so good. Somebody should tweet that.
Well, you got more followers than me, man.
That's all of our fears, you know? Like, the anticipation of our greatest fear becoming reality is not as is way more terrifying than it actually becoming a reality. It's always how it is.
Yeah. Hey, you've
good, man.
Oh, it's all right, man. You can tweet that later if you want. You had One of the things that I think, you know, everyday men have not been to the places that you've been to. So you've been to the pinnacle of sports. You've won a Super Bowl. You've played for a team that probably goes down in history as one of the most famous teams, the Legion of Boom. You've sailed to the top of the highest mountaintops. And when you get there and you taste that success, is it all worth it?
Man, sometimes when I answer questions like that, it feels like I'm telling people that Santa Claus is not as great as you think. You know, like he's awesome.
Yeah.
But when you get up close to it, he's just a regular guy. And at worst, he's not real. Mm. Like that whole type of thing. Like it is absolutely amazing. And I got to play 6 years in the NFL with arguably one of the greatest coaches of all time. Mm. Somebody who I've wanted to play for since I was 15 years old. And I got to be in 2 Super Bowl games. I got to be in enough playoff games for it to be its own NFL season. Mm. And because I have all of these successes and accomplishments, that means that I should feel happy all the time and that all my insecurities and inadequacies should go away. And it's just never like that. Mm. And even though it is amazing, what I've found is that we can't tether our entire sense of worth or value to anything that's external from us. Mm. Anytime that we try and get a sense of esteem from something that can be taken away is ultimately going to create a fragile sense of masculinity or ego. And I think that's why there's so many guys who, when they're done with their time in professional sports, struggle so much.
Yeah.
Because that's who you were from the time you were 5 years old. You were always the best football player. And then you have to go and recreate a new life and build your life upon something else. And that's utterly terrifying.
Mm,
mm. I remember, after we won the Super Bowl, everybody kept saying, I keep waiting for it to sink in that we won the Super Bowl. I said that a bunch. I remember in training camp of the next year, I was sitting.
This sound is processed by StereoTool. Go to StereoTool.com.
Me and a couple of guys from the Legion of Boom are all talking. We're like, man, can you believe we won a Super Bowl? Like, I keep waiting for it to sink in. And what I realized all of us were saying, or what all of us really meant, was I keep waiting for this thing to satisfy me the way that I thought it would, and it just hasn't.
Yeah.
I keep waiting for this thing to make me happy like I thought it would, and it hasn't, and that's kind of a bummer. So I'm all for people pursuing their goals, pursuing success, because I believe that honors God. But if we buy into this lie that once I get this thing, then I'm going to be happy, then that's a scary place to be in, and you need to just guard your heart.
Well, I remember watching a interview with Tom Brady after he won his first Super Bowl and how elated he was. And then one of the more recent videos of Tom Brady after winning, I forget what it was, his third, fourth, fifth Super Bowl, you could just see it in his eyes. Like, is this it? Is this all it is? Like, he was trying to process the fact that he had sailed to the top of the mountaintop that he thought was the absolute pinnacle. And he didn't get that sense of completeness. You just, as you're watching the interview, you're like, this is a guy who's like, is there something more? Like, I don't know what to do now.
Right.
And I feel like when I talk with you, Clint, is that you have a sense of completeness and fulfillment in your life that Tom Brady, who arguably might be the greatest quarterback of all time, does not yet have.
Yeah. And I think in a lot of ways he is, you know, modern day Solomon, King Solomon, you know, writing Ecclesiastes, where it's like, I have everything.
Yeah.
And it isn't making me happy like I thought it would. And I'm really thankful that God got a hold of my life and a hold of my heart before I got into the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that with the nature of my position, because I was an unknown guy, like that also guarded me in a lot of ways. But nothing scares me more than when I see a guy come into the NFL and they don't know who they are, because it's almost impossible to not allow how people treat you to turn you into something that's a little bit scary. So thankfully God got a hold of my life before I got into the NFL.
Because I would imagine that the NFL would be one of those places where it's like you're either all in or you're all out for Jesus. Like, I mean, you know, because of the nature of the industry and what it puts you around in terms of, like, if you wanted to do some naughty stuff, you could do some really naughty stuff if you wanted to. And so that question gets asked, I guess, really quickly of you.
Yeah, I always tell people that the NFL will make you decide who your God is.
Mm.
And it's a good thing, man. You know, it makes you choose. And I think that it forces people to decide, which I think that helps people process their identity much faster.
Clinton, 2016, you've been playing for the Seattle Seahawks, and then you get that phone call that says, mate, we got to release you. And what happens in that moment, man?
I was really surprised. I was in the middle of a golf lesson, and it's never a good thing when it's March and you have 2 years left on your contract and you see your general manager's name pop up on your phone. not a good thing. So I let it go to voicemail. I iced him because if you're going to fire me, it's going to be on my turn. And, man, I called him back, and he's there with Coach Carroll, and he just says, hey, Clint, thank you. We appreciate everything that you've done. We found somebody else, and we're going to be moving on. And, man, you know, the whole conversation lasted a minute and a half. And I remember driving home and telling my wife what happened. And at first it was really, really sad because of my relationship with football. Football was my identity for years. That's what made me feel important. It's what made me feel significant. And even though I could have gotten up in front of a crowd of 1,000 people and preached a message about how my identity is not in sports, inevitably we will put our identity in the thing which gives us the greatest sense of significance, sense of significance, which usually for guys is our job.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, thankfully I had to confront that. And so at first it was a grieving process. Like, it was the death of my identity in football, and writing my book really helped expedite that in a lot of ways.
Mm.
Just as I was able to process through not only stuff with football, but stuff from my childhood and disappointments and overcoming and having a new relationship with pain. And then after about a year that it took for me to start feeling normal again, to start feeling like I was myself. And my wife felt like I finally got my husband back, because football was really hard for me. And I'm a sensitive guy. Like, I'm in touch with my heart, and I often felt like I didn't belong in this world, specifically with football. Just because, man, it's as bravado and macho as you can get. And that really took a toll on my emotional life. And after time, I started to kind of come alive again. I wouldn't trade the time that I took, that I had in the NFL, for anything. But I certainly don't think I would want to go back either.
It's a crazy moment. I think this happened to me in 2014, where my identity as a pastor was kind of taken away from me. And God was asking the question, are you a servant of mine or are you a child of mine? And do you see me as a father or as a boss? And I had to sit with that because I felt like my identity was actually very closely tied to being a pastor and not being a child of God. Was that a similar kind of moment for you with that experience?
Man, I think that it's in our nature to want to be religious and to want to work for our worth. I mean, our entire worldview usually is shaped by the more you can do, the more significant you are, the more value you have. It's all determined on our works. And, you know, you look at sports where you've got a young kid who is struggling for an identity, and they go and they score a touchdown or score a goal, and then we praise that person. And now all of a sudden they get into their head that the better that I play, the more affirmation and praise that I get.
Yeah.
And so you do that for a couple decades of of training people that love is based on your works. And then it's no wonder that all of us have these identity crises when, you know, we get fired or whatever it is. Mm. It's very unfortunate that is kind of the way that the world works. And I think I'm still trying to understand, like, what's the best way to help separate people from their identity and what they do. But it's a challenging process, man. And usually those moments where we get fired or we get some disappointing news, those are the times in our lives where God really does grow us and mold us in ways that we really need.
I mean, let's land here for a second, because, I mean, March 2016 was fairly recent. You know, and so you've recently processed through this, and like you said, you've landed in a place where, you know, you and your family and your wife feel like you're kind of back to your old self. So someone's listening to us right now and they're thinking, man, I'm in that place. I'm in that place where I feel abject failure. I don't know who my identity is with, where it is. I don't know what to do. I feel like the entire weight of the world is upon me and nothing I can do is right. What do you want to say to that person?
Yeah, don't rush it. Mm. Don't get in a hurry to get out of that. If you feel uncomfortable, if you feel sad, if you feel depressed, if you feel like a failure, it's going to take everything in you to sit there and just learn how to rest in that. Mm. And we need to have that kind of relationship with it. Instead of being afraid of our emotions, whatever it may be, just learn to have peace with it.
Mm.
And if you can be okay with sitting in the middle of pain, then you're going to protect yourself from all of the things that the world and the enemy tries to introduce to you as a false sense of comfort instead of leaning on God.
Mm.
So being patient with the process, and the subtitle of my book is Loving the Process, the Wholeness. Yeah. And it's this idea of liking who you are in the middle of character not being totally worked out or answers not being given to you yet or certain situations that you had been hoping for. It's that in between.
Mm.
You know, it's anybody who ever did anything for God in the Bible always endured a very toilsome process, which gave the distinct illusion that what God said was going to happen was not going to happen. I mean, Noah told to build an ark, Abraham waiting for his son, you know, Mary carrying a baby in a society that stoned women for what it was perceived that she had done, Jesus hanging on the cross. I mean, all of them had to put up with discomfort that was temporary to eventually get to what God was trying to establish in them. So as long as you don't rush that, you're going to really like who you are on the other side of those feelings of inadequacy and failure.
Clint, I love that. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us today, man.
Man, great to be with you.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.